Coming up on TMS. Yo, these speakers are the sh**.
I don't like squeaky teeth.
Drive backwards and it says Paul is dead.
William Tell lost his new grooves.
When did Neil Diamond jump the shark?
Hello, all that and a supreme tubular beef experience.
You got fungus in my hot chocolate.
4 inches is very subjective.
Bernie poo later.
Squeak, kill me. Squeak, kill me. Squeak, kill me.
Liebot.
Damn it, Jim, I'm a hunter, not a paleontologist.
They're British if it helps.
Tactile drafting with Bill.
Dinosaur Hootie Patootie with Bobby and more on this episode of The Morning Stream.
Frank Sinkiewicz, the 1942 Heisman Trophy winner from Georgia, died early today at his Athens home. He was 70 degrees.
Hi, I'm Louis Pearl, and I love making bubbles.
This is The Morning Stream. The hell you say?
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to TMS. It's Tuesday, October 18th, 2022. I'm Scott Johnson. That's Brian Ibbett. Hi, Brian.
Oh, hi, Scott. Hello.
Hey, man. Look, I got in this drink cup here, this Contigo freaking thermos deal.
Yeah, what you got? What you got in there?
Something Kim calls... mushroom. I don't know what it's called, actually.
I'm out.
It's like coffee ish or almost hot cocoa ish.
Like it's an infused. So you're against grinding beans that grow on trees that have been roasted and
I'm not against it. Go for it.
You know, you call it dirt water, but then you're going to like have mushroom tea?
Well, that's what's... I guess it would be kind of a tea then. You're right. That's what to call it. It's pretty good. I'm surprised.
It's either a soup if the mushrooms are still in there, but if the mushrooms have been removed, then it's a tea.
Yeah. It tastes... I'm getting kind of a... I don't know what to compare this to. Almost like a hot chocolate, but not sweet. It's kind of what it's like. It doesn't taste like mushrooms.
Wow.
Which is weird. And it's supposed to be good for you. It's supposed to be like all
hot
like...
chocolate. Interesting.
Yeah, right. I know. It's really interesting. So anyway, that's what I'm drinking today, everybody. They make a bunch of claims on their box like improves cognitive function and makes you smart or whatever. I don't know if it's true.
Makes your ship go.
Yeah, makes it go. It's Packlid chocolate tea. Anyway, we'll see how I do with it for the thing of the show. Maybe it'll go straight through me and I got to take a big old dump mid-show. I don't know.
Right.
It's mushrooms.
Right. Well, do mushrooms usually do that to you? Like if you have mushrooms like on a salad or pizza or something like that?
If you have a bunch of them, yeah. I mean, they're high in fiber. So I would think they go straight to your goober, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, we got a couple things here. So Steve, my brother-in-law, Steve.
Yes.
He wrote or sent me a text and says, hey, you know that street you were talking about in California where it's the musical road, you know, where you drive on it?
Yeah, the one that plays the William Tell Overture and...
Yeah, but does so poorly.
It was an 8-minute video, the first 7 minutes of which is the guy describing how he's driving on the musical road.
That's right. That's the one. He said... You know, we talked about the one in, was it Turkey or Hungary, whatever it was, that was like
Hungary.
Really,
there was some song we didn't recognize, but was
really good,
much better than the
Yeah, it sounded legit, had like a cadence and a beat and everything.
Yeah.
And this one sounded terrible. Well, he says there's a reason. They built it wrong twice.
Oh no, really? Okay.
Yeah, and
tell
now
me
it's
more.
Just stuck. So I'm gonna play a little bit of a YouTube video I found that describes this. And we'll just hear his description part of it because we've heard the road
before.
Hey,
YouTube, a lot of people have been asking me to make this video, you know, so I'm going to tell you all about it. But before I do that, make sure to click like and subscribe so you don't miss any of my original content. By the way, this video is sponsored by Wix.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
You're close. No, you're not. You're actually not too close. This video has 19 million views, and he's a British man, which helps. So here's that.
They do it better over there.
It always helps when it's a British man, I think.
Yeah.
All right, here you go. Let's get a little sound going here.
If you drive down a certain stretch of highway in the California desert, you will hear music. It's supposed to sound a little bit like this.
That's how it's supposed to sound, say.
Yeah. With drums and strings.
But instead, it sounds like this.
There's the actual sound. Okay, so he explains all that, and he goes on, and this is only like a 4-minute video, but he goes on later to explain that when they did it, somebody told them, the engineers, the guys who designed this, mm-hmm. said, hey, the way this works is from groove to groove, you've got to put so many inches.
Right.
And
right.
that's how we get a note and a beat and whatever.
Sure, exactly.
And if you don't do that, it's going to be mixed up. Well, they didn't understand and didn't ask. So they went from, so if it was 4 inches, they said, oh, okay, you said 4 inches. Is that from the beginning of the groove to the beginning of the next groove? Or is that from end of groove to beginning of next groove?
Right.
Where they didn't ask. So they're kind of all over the place, and they completely left it up. And the first go around was bad.
They're like five different people working on it, and each of the five are cutting grooves at a different.
Yeah, and no one's asking. No one's asking. Yeah, no one's sure, this sure. typical freaking waste of municipal funds. So then sure. they go and they try it again because they're so unhappy with it, and they do the same exact thing except they reverse it or something. They do it like the other way, the wrong measurement. Anyway, at the end of the day, the bottom line is the whole thing was just a complete kerfuffle. And the reason when you ride on it, it doesn't sound right, it's because they never actually freaking got it right. They just wasted it. They wasted the money, whatever money that took. I don't know if it was, it may have been a lot. It may have not been a lot, but because the right hand and the left hand never knew what each other was doing, it's just completely fouled up. So what's the freaking point of even going through with it? Just smooth it out and not have it, you know?
Do they have sound of what the first go-round sounded like? Like, yeah. if the second one sounds as bad as it does.
Oh, this one doesn't. This is because they paved over it, so he's only got what they've got.
Yeah. But there's no, like, audio recording of what the first one sounded like before they paved over it?
Not that I know of. Not that I could find.
Okay. All right.
I did some digging around.
I'd love to know what that sounds like.
Yeah. But I love this idea that it's just a complete F up, and no wonder, like, we're listening to the one in Hungary in Hungary. And it's just like, oh wow. Why aren't all roads made to be this fun? Why can't we do this everywhere?
Couldn't it just be a case of, we waited or they waited to see how to do it. We showed them how not to do it. And then because we did that, it was better. Like, is that the,
I don't know. Who knows?
Basically they learned from our mistakes instead of making them on their own.
I mean, probably.
Hungarians.
What are they doing over there?
I mean, really?
Yeah. Who names their country after a state of starvation? I'm hungry. You know?
Right. Who indeed?
Maybe Hungary needs to merge with Turkey, and then they won't be hungry anymore. Get it?
Yeah, except the problem is the Greece.
Oh, I didn't think about that. You have to throw Greece in there. Nobody wants those Greece islands.
Nobody
yes, they
wants
do.
Greasy turkey.
I'd go to Greece. I'd go there now if I could. That'd be cool.
Oh, sure.
Anyway, so there's that. Thanks, Steve, for poking me about that. Real quick here, just a shout out to Joe and his son. I don't know the details. I just know they were in the ER for some reason, and the TMS yesterday like got them through a very rough day in the ER. And I wanted to give Joe and his son a shout out. And it sounds like he's okay, getting the care he needs for whatever it was. I mean, we hope your son's okay and that nothing long term, but I'm glad to hear. I always happy to hear when the show is like, you know, meaningful for people in hard situations.
Yeah. When people, because we get those emails that always, you know, make my day is like, hey, I was having a crappy day yesterday, but you're, you know, hearing the show brighten things up and thanks for what you do and blah, blah, blah. So,
yeah, it's always nice.
Keep those emails coming because they recharge our batteries.
They do. My batteries, sometimes they get low.
And they refill our heart containers is what they do.
That's right. And makes it so honest. I can turn on my heart light and let
make
it shine.
Shine wherever you go.
America.
Make it cast a lovely glow for all the world to see.
I'm kind of in the mood for him today.
Neil Diamond?
Yeah. Is that weird that I want to hear Neil Diamond? Like, unironically?
It's weird that song, because that is, for me, 100%. Post-shark jumping Neil Diamond.
Oh, it's not good. There's no, you're not wrong, but there's something about it.
Give me Cracklin' Rosie. Give me Brother Love's Traveling Medicine Show or whatever it's called. I Am, I Said.
Yeah.
You know, that stuff.
I said.
But once he started turning into the character that Will Ferrell eventually did of him, that was the shark jumping moment. And I hate to say it, but that song "Hello Again," as much as I love it, and as earwormy as it is, "Hello Again," "Hello," That was about the point. That was about the shark jumping.
Yeah, he was getting out then. Still with us. Is he performing? Let's see.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, you know, he's... let's see. I'm trying to find this here. Neil Diamond.
Forever in Blue Jeans. Yeah, Larry Kenobi. That's such a great one. Money talks. and don't get me started on the Sweet Caroline.
Sweet Caroline.
Debacle. I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
but the whole so good, so good. He's not saying things are so good, so good. He's saying good times never seem so good, right? Like he's comparing these great times we're having to other times. He's not saying, oh, these good times are so good, so everyone's repeating so good, so good, so good. No, he's saying good times never felt so good. And those, repeating those words, no, it's a bad idea.
Yeah, you're right.
Put my foot down with American, wrap that one with American cheese.
There you go. Yeah, put on the armor of American cheese on that opinion. And no one will have a problem with it. I forgot he did that Longfellow Serenade song. I like that song.
Longfellow Serenade.
Yeah.
I don't know if I know that one.
74, I think. Let's see. How does it go? I can't remember how this goes. Is there a version of it here somewhere? That one's in my head. But anyway, I'm in the mood. I don't know why. I'm just going to go do like a greatest hits listen. Just unironically enjoy some Neil Diamond today.
There you go. Stop after track 9 or something. Yeah. Wherever things start going off the tracks. I wonder, let me see actually. Let's take a look at Neil Diamond greatest hits. I'm sure there are no less than 12 Neil Diamond greatest hits albums. We'll go with the most popular one, which is All Time Greatest Hits Deluxe Edition.
Oh, that's the most, that's weird. When your greatest hits is your best selling album, that's always weird.
Well,
isn't it?
No, I did a search specifically for Neil Diamond greatest hits.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
But it doesn't surprise me. I would think that his greatest hits are his most popular albums.
Yeah.
All right, so Brother Love's Traveling Salvation Show, Sweet Caroline, Holly Holy, Solitary Man, Forever in Blue Jeans, we're so good right now. Suleiman, I Am I Said, Crunchy Granola Sweet, we're all so good. Play Me, Kentucky Woman, whoa, what's happening? You Don't Bring Me Flowers, what's going on? Song Sung Blue, oh no! Oh, I take that back because we still have Crackling Rosie, Cherry Cherry, Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon. No, we're back on.
When do we get America? Did you already say that one?
No, I've not gotten there. It's all right. Love on the Rocks might be
ain't no big surprise.
Yeah, the last.
You get the burger and I'll get the fries.
is that how it goes?
I think so.
Yeah, I think that might be it, because then you get into Hello Again, America.
Yeah.
Heartlight, The Boat That I Row, Thank the Lord. Oh, Thank the Lord for the Nighttime. I feel like that one must have come out earlier because that's one of the good ones.
Yeah, that is a good one. You're right. But he kind of did. He kind of had a Chicago thing happen to him, you know?
Right.
They just hit a weird thing in the 80s and they're like, oh, yes. I guess everybody wants this, so we're doing this now.
And they said, sorry, Peter Cetera, you've taken us down. You've turned us into elevator music. Yeah. Go on your own and make some Karate Kid stuff. Thanks.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah, see you later. Have a good one. Have a good life.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll let you guys know how that goes. But yeah. Joe and your son, we hope things work out. Hey.
Wow. They were really derailed from Joe and his son, but...
We have good news. If you were sitting around on your pins and needles, waiting for Marvel Snap to happen, we talked about it yesterday. It's out today, so go download it and play it. It's available on all mobile devices, and we got some news about where it also is heading from Luke in Boulder, who often pipes in and lets us know things.
Yeah.
So he said in the following email.
Send and receive email.
TheMorningStream@gmail.com. He says, howdy, gents. Like Brian, I've been playing Marvel Snap throughout the beta. Just wanted to add two quick notes on y'all's discussion today. Number one. You can play Marvel Snap on M1 Max. Just search for the Marvel Snap app in the Mac App Store. Awesome. I'm going to do that.
Still not showing up for me yet in the App Store, but I'm sure at some point it will.
Probably should. Yeah. It was a little hard finding it on the phone, honestly. It was tricky.
Oh, really? I didn't even have to use your link you sent me. It's on the front page of the App Store, the very top of the front page.
Oh, they're promoting it. If you do a search, it hasn't propagated their search yet. So if you do a search for it, it's like 20 sure. down or
that
something.
Would make sense. Yeah.
That's part of the problem. Anyway, number two, you can pre-register for early access to Marvel Snap on Steam here. And he gave us a Steam Steam link. Won't officially be released until sometime in 2023, but it is coming to Steam. Cool. For iOS, M1 Max, and Android, though, global launch today. Woohoo, says Luke in Boulder. Yeah, it's exciting stuff. I'm glad it's coming to Steam. I think that's going to be huge for them to have that on a big PC platform.
I think so, too. It'll be fun to play it on the Steam Deck if my iPad is doing something or my phone is doing something. And but you'll need the horizontal view will almost be required for Steam Deck.
Yeah, I mean they're doing that. So they have to for all of it for Steam. And if you're gonna take it out of a portrait mode type game, you gotta do it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's your. You know, there's your little catch up this morning. You know, some things there to mull over, think about.
So we'll we're here. If you have questions, if you have maybe we should add a channel to the Frog Pans Discord or something, but for people to talk about the game.
Yeah, if you guys have questions, I'll bet Brian has answers. He's played a lot.
I have answers. I can give you answers.
Yep. It's a big.
Just waiting to see. Golly, I just this dang tutorial. I'm going to do it after the show, but I thought it would be like tap all your cards and content are downloaded. Boom, we're done, and now we're set. But
nope, we got to redo that too.
Made me go through three AI, AI opponent games, and it's like, all right, we'll just wait.
Yeah, you got to tutorial that business. That's how it works. Yeah. Well, thanks, Second Dinner. We appreciate it. All right.
Yeah, thanks, Ben Brode.
Thanks, Mr.
Hey,
Brode.
Ben hey, Brode here.
Ben Brode, the voice of God, Ben Brode. Here now, I present you this. It's time for the news, and it's brought to you by...
Getting J-Dogs after a clean run at the dentist.
Went to the dentist yesterday. No issues, no cavities or any of that crap.
Sure.
Got a new hygienist. She didn't know about the nerve area, but she hit it, and it was a little sad for a moment, but it's fine. Whatever, we worked out.
I feel like that hitting that nerve just makes you feel like you're alive. It just reminds you of, hey, I'm a mortal man.
Yep. And I'm a living, breathing being who has sensitive nerves in his face. It's a good thing to wake up to. Anyway, I went and did that right after the show yesterday, and it all went fine. And this particular dentist always gives us free J-Dog coupons for coming in. Yeah, they have some deal with them. And J-Dog's is this local, amazing hot dog place that you just, oh, so good. I could eat there every day. If there was one near me, I'd be screwed. Yeah. I'd be so screwed.
Okay, but wait a minute. Because my dentist gives me yet another toothbrush that I'll never use because I bought an electric toothbrush, Sonicare, through them to get the discount.
Yeah.
The tiniest tube of toothpaste that always goes in my travel bag with the other 14.
Yep.
Some floss. A little tiny thing of floss, and then the business card that tells me the next date. You're getting freaking lunch coupons, free hot dogs?
Free, not even just the hot dogs. And these aren't just hot dogs. These are like big, long, not foot long, but like big, thick, beefy, you can get Polish or beef.
Yeah.
They cut them diagonally and cook them right there on the grill as you're watching. They're big and just juicy and amazing. They put those on there, and then you can just go. I put everything on there, but you can choose all the stuff to go on there. So I'm putting kraut and fresh onions and the sauce they make and celery salt and just all this stuff, and load it up.
Yeah.
Jalapenos are really good there because they're not the horrible too hot kind that are gonna make you have Bernie poo later. They're
pickled.
They're perfect.
They are pickled though, as opposed to just
a little more. They're not pickled, but they're more. I don't know if they're. How does it work with peppers? If the older they are, the more hot they are. Isn't that the deal? Or is it when they're younger, or when they're more?
I just thought the smaller ones were hotter because they're. You know, it's like a condensed area. Hey.
Someone explained this to me once, and I can't freaking remember. There's something
that's
about.
Interesting. If I mean, you mean left on the tree longer, they get hotter, or
I think it's even if you. So if you cut them up and bottle them, preserve them as soon as they're ripe and ready, that they're hotter than if you give it some time and let them age.
Interesting. I have never heard that, but I don't doubt it. I do believe you.
Sounds something like that. But anyway, so you put all that on there, you load that boat up, and then They also comes with chips and drinks and all that stuff. It's a whole meal you get for free from the dentist. And the food there, oh, it's so freaking good. I love it so much. And as soon as she like pulled out the coupons, I made a squeal noise. I made a sound. And she says to Kimball, he's easy to please, she says. And I'm like, yeah, these are J-Dog coupons. Are you kidding me?
Do they still give you the toothbrush and the toothpaste and all that stuff? Or yeah. Do they just replace all that? So you get all that and a hot dog.
Yeah, we get all that and a hot dog as well.
Sorry, a supreme tubular beef experience. Immersive meat time.
Yeah, it's just a lot. It's a whatever the opposite of like going into a 7-Eleven and pulling something off that roller thing with the hot dog. Rolls. Whatever the opposite of that is what these are. They're so good. Anyway, so we did that and it was amazing, and I'm glad we did. That's all I'm saying. Okay. It's the only reason I like going to the dentist is I know I'm going to get J-Dog.
It is, you know, thinking about it, that would be a very nice carrot at the end of the stick.
I think they know it too. So that's why they do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They're like, people hate it here. We should make them hate it less. It's kind of what they say.
Yeah.
All right. First story today. We got some cows in the news. Cattle. Right. Cattle, if you will, you know. Cow dung sneakers and dog hair rugs. These are new innovations in what's called upcycling in Singapore. Or it was part of Singapore Design Week, but it's anyway, they're showing off this stuff. So if you want some speakers, I say sneakers, I meant speakers.
You said sneakers, so.
I meant speakers.
Speakers.
It's even weirder, though, right?
Maybe just as weird, but. Certainly not less weird.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. I mean, the idea that you could take anything and make a speaker out of it that isn't normal, whatever speakers are made out of. I guess they're usually made out of plastics.
Well, wood on the outside and then a fiber thing for the actual woofer and tweeter.
Yeah, I assume that's a lot of plastic or silicone or... I don't know what they make this stuff out of, but in this case, Southeast Asia has a waste problem. The region accounts for over half of the 10 countries in which the most plastic pollution leaks into rivers and seas, according to the World Bank. In addition to their own production, countries like Malaysia and Vietnam are among the leading importers of consumer waste from the developed world. That'd be us, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Perhaps then is a little surprise, or it is little surprise that recycling, reusing, and repurposing were major themes at this year's Singapore Design Week. I'd never even heard of this. Along the 10-day program, which concluded Sunday, local and international designers grappled with environmental threats and the role design can play in alleviating them. Many of the most innovative examples of upcycling were found at the event's Find Design Fair, which spotlighted the work of young creatives from around the region. The showcase, dubbed Emerge, was a broadened scope. But there was a kind of a broad trash to treasure theme, they say. And two of the things were speakers made out of cow shit. and think about this. Cow poop is like a fibrous, kind of cross-stitchy little thing. You ever got a good look at a cow poop up close?
I have. I apparently haven't seen the ones that look like needlepoint. I mean, I've seen ones that have hay like going all throughout there, but you're apparently seeing some sort of Hobby Lobby remnant.
Well, I think they probably the idea. It's a little like my mushroom tea thing over here. They probably compress that all down into some kind of mushed up material and flatten it out, and then. You know, I don't know if it reeks or not, if you play too much bass.
I would be curious to see, like, all right, what are they? Are they making the entire speaker out of cow poop or just the case?
I don't think they say.
Obviously, there's some electronics in there, so those can't be made.
Oh, here it is. Here's a picture.
Okay. All right, I'm going to take a look at it right now. CNN.com.
I'm a little bit shocked by this photo because it's not at all what I pictured. So, Brian, here, I'll put this in here.
Okay. Oh, well, I'm on the there it is right there. Yeah. All right, so it's the case. The case is made of poop, and then the speakers itself.
The speakers are just regular-ass speakers.
They're still woofer. It's still your separate woofer and tweeter, but now it looks like a Dr. Seuss character.
Yeah, and I think what they've done is, let's see, cow dung is a natural material, but it's also responsible for polluting water and emitting gases like methane and ammonia. So to counter the environmental impact of farming... They developed a... Oh, so this wasn't even so much to... I'm thinking of it the opposite way. Like, oh, the materials to make speakers are ruining the environment. No, it's the other way around. It's all this cow dung is ruining the environment. So we need to repurpose that stuff to be less of a landfill.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. And in the process, you know, they're saving other materials, right? They're saving the wood that would normally be the outside of the case. So there's a benefit there.
Here's what they say. A team led by someone, can't read their name, who is also a teacher and researcher, blah, blah, blah. There's an institute of technology called the Bandung Institute of Technology. That's perfect.
You're banning dung.
Yep. I think it's great that he works there. Anyway, they clean the dung with water, which then removes the smell. It is then combined with scrap plastic and wood glue in a mold before being dried at low heat until hard. That's it. That's your speaker. I'd use that on a table. That's fine.
Oh, for sure.
No problem. Send me one.
It's a really cool looking speaker. And if there's no smell, if there's no bacteria or anything like that, I think I'm on board.
Yep. It's pretty good. Here's another one. Let's see. Washing machine tube lamps.
That kind of looks cool.
That does look cool.
Yeah.
I would use that one. I don't even know what to make of it, but I'd use it.
I know. I like how, you know, it's got a bar that it's basically plugged, both ends plugged into a bar, and you just kind of like drape it over all silly.
Yeah.
All silly.
What is the light, do you suppose? Is that just LEDs in there or something? What is that?
Probably. Yeah. Yeah.
It is. Inserting LED strips into flexible hoses, and then you bend them into shapes. He calls it scribble. Uh-huh. Let's see. Plastic waste furniture. I'm always a big fan of that. Those look cool. Hair rugs. Here we go. Dog hair. Oh, okay. So they're not.
I've got one of those.
Yeah, and, I didn't buy it like that, but it is now. No, what they do, I guess, I was thinking maybe they, I don't know what the dog situation in Singapore is. Are they still eating them like in parts of Korea or whatever? But no, what it is their dog grooming services cut off over 2 pounds of fur a day. Anyway, it's a ton of stuff. So they want to, let's see, it's not a major pollutant, but their idea is like, hey, what if we took just the hair from, you know, cleaning these dogs?
Right. And like all the stuff that they brush out and trim off with the trimmers and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's pretty cool. They also saw flexible sawdust, which is like this crazy.
Yeah. I wonder what the polymer is that kind of connects all those.
Yeah. I don't know what that is. And then as you scroll down, there's a whole thing about nude art and censorship laid bare. That has nothing to do with this story, but I can see that lady's what are you gonna do. It just came up. It's on the internet, you know.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Ran into it. All right, here's the story.
I'm not seeing what you're seeing, but maybe I better not look for it.
keep scrolling. Do you not see it at the very bottom of the page if you keep scrolling that page?
No. So you've got that weird blue fan.
Yeah.
And then another block of text. And then I have a big blank space. Is that where the...
You might be blocking it or something.
Oh, you mean this Rina Fukushi explores her experiences with identity? The next...
What I think happened, I bet you're getting a random, we're getting random.
We're getting random recommended articles based on what we've.
You see it?
What we've previously viewed on CNN, apparently.
Yeah. We always go to CNN for our softcore pornography.
Exactly.
A school superintendent. They're often called principals here. Or sometimes, I guess when you do it on the...
Is it the same thing? Like a superintendent? Isn't a superintendent over the principal?
Is it the same?
Super Nintendo Chalmers over Principal Skinner?
Well, but superintendent in that context is over the entire district. Okay. Because Chalmers is in charge of multiple schools. Whereas, I think in Europe, if you say superintendent or headmaster, you're talking about your principal, I think. I'm not sure.
Oh, really? Okay.
Unsure to be sure. Someone will write in and tell us. Anyway, school superintendent.
Chat room is telling us right now. Superintendent does run the district, and then they're the principals.
Is that true in the other parts of the world? I know that's true here because I never had a superintendent. It was always principal.
When you said headmaster, that sounded familiar. Is this
It's WTRF.com. I don't know who this is.
We don't know where this is. Baldwinsville. Okay.
Anyway, it says this. A school superintendent arrested for drunk driving after he was spotted crowd surfing at a high school football game. So it must be here.
Yeah.
According to the Baldwinsville Police Department, Jason D. Thompson was observed by numerous individuals at the football game crowd surfing in the student section of the bleachers of the Baker High School. And you might say, oh, no, that's just him hooking, you know, he's with the students. He's being one of them. Yeah, he's showing them, you
exactly.
know, hey, he's we're like, all in this together. Hey, kids, what's up, kids? I'm one of you, you know, one of those deals. Well, several students reported to a district staff that they suspected Mr. Thompson was under the influence of alcohol.
Oh no.
Just like the kids. A short time later, around 8 p.m., Baldwinsville police officer observed Thompson operating a vehicle without a front plate and saw him make a turn without using his turn signal. They pulled him over, they did the sobriety test, and he was arrested and charged with driving while intoxicated. He had a blood alcohol level of higher than 0.08%. I guess that differs on per state, right? Every state's got their own rule.
I think so. Yeah, that's an interesting question. You'd think that would be something that you think all states could agree on. Like how much alcohol in your blood is drunk?
Yeah. I wonder, I mean, I don't know. We're so big on states' rights here. It's probably just slightly different in certain states, but yeah, some of them have to be
Diesel
the same.
Diesel says 0.08 was national. He thought 0.08 was national.
Is there a federal level? I didn't know that. That's interesting. That would make sense to me because wouldn't you know, because the science is the same. It's not like, oh, well, exactly. If you're that drunk in Idaho, you're not going to crash.
Here in Montana, our roads are a lot wider, so we kind of allow for a lot more drinking.
Yeah, those people can swing wide, man.
By the way, that guy kind of looks a little bit like TVZ Gun.
Oh, my gosh, he does. Somebody please
check out TVZ Gun. Make sure he's not crowd surfing at a high school right
there
now.
There he is. Oh, shoot. Hold on. Let me pause it. Okay,
yeah.
This guy.
Oh, look at that. Yeah, there he is, crowd surfing. Oh, I love it.
Oh, it's not showing now. There he is. Oh, my gosh, TVZ Gun. He's fled Arizona and is now... Oh, my gosh, that's insane. I wish he was here today.
I do, too.
Yeah, I asked him the other day, Zach, we don't see you live anymore. Oh, it's my job thing and stuff.
Yeah.
Bummed me out because I like him. I like his titles. He does good titles.
He has good titles. He has good contributions if I'm not playing Oingo Boingo, but even better ones if I do.
Yeah. So anyway, this guy's probably getting fired. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Hope he wasn't giving a kid a ride home.
Right? Like, I get the idea of, like, I don't know, you try to, you want the kids to feel, I don't know, that feeling of like, hey, this adult gets us, you know, or whatever.
Right. You want to be one of them so they trust you and all that
stuff.
Yeah,
but I think he's actually maybe an alcoholic who's crowd surfing and, you know, it's trouble. Yeah. It's trouble. Don't be doing that. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's get into Ukrainian story here.
Okay. Well, Ukrainian story. Yeah. About Ukraine.
You know how we've been, you know, we follow all the hot goings on around the world here on the show. We're very strict newsmen here at PMS. Yes, we are. So this is just part of that tradition. Okay.
Yes. Okay.
15,000 Ukrainians decide to have a massive orgy if Russia deploys any nukes, tactical or otherwise. I don't care which
makes
kind.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They could be attacked.
It doesn't feel like they were just looking for an excuse to have an orgy.
Yeah.
This feels like something that was well thought out.
That's right.
Definitely feels like a cause and effect.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
You can see the relation between those two things.
Yeah. You know, like if you walk in the rain, you get wet.
Right. Nuclear weapons, orgy time.
Yeah. You set fire to a house, you get smoke. Mm-hmm. You're going to do a nuke, a whole bunch of people get naked and go for it. That's the deal.
Makes sense to me.
They decide to do this. The fear of using nukes by Russia against the Ukraine looms over the current crisis, but some Ukrainians have found a creative solution. A large group of Ukrainians have decided to organize a massive orgy to take place on a hill outside of Kyiv, in case Putin does launch the nuclear bomb. Nuclear bomb. Did I say it right?
Listen to you.
Nuclear bomb.
Nuclear.
My dad used to say nuclear.
Nuclear. Yeah.
And so growing up, everybody, we just got screwed with having to say it that way because my dad said it that way. And so what I had to do was I had to retrain my voice every time I say it to say new, the word new, and the last word as just clear, like I've cleared my room, I've cleared the space. So new clear.
The band The Vapors famously had the song Turning Japanese. Came from an album called New Clear Days, and that was a good way for me to, as a kid, remember how to pronounce nuclear.
There you go.
New Clear Days.
And it now, because of that training or that resetting my brain,
yes,
the other way just sounds weird to me now, which is what it should do. It should sound weird to say nuclear.
Oh, yeah, it should sound weird.
Yeah. But Dunaway does it once in a while, and it makes me laugh. So
nuclear.
That was a good
one. On my Mingo phone. Nuclear.
A moist towelette.
All right.
Aging Mr. Herman.
He's really good at those voices.
He really is.
More than 15,000 have already registered on Telegram for the sex party. The mass orgy will take place on a hill outside the city where the participants will be asked to decorate their hands and colored with colored stripes symbolizing their sexual interests.
That feels like it's great for the beginning. Those colored stripes might turn into just a purplish mush, or purplish blend, or brown, or something.
Yeah,
after
they're all going to mix. Yeah, they're all going to mix together. This is where your color your color theory training comes into play. There, Ukrainians.
That's right. Maybe there's a better place to put those colored stripes.
It says here, I can't believe they even care to put this in here, but three stripes are for.
What my genitalia look like candy cane.
Okay, here's what the three stripes are, Brian, in case you go. Okay.
Oh, good. Okay, excellent.
Three stripes are for anal.
Any color? Like, this is...
Any color, right. Just has to be three stripes. And then four stripes, that's for the oral, it says.
Okay, gotcha.
Don't mix them up, you guys. Make it clear, okay?
Interesting that there's not one and two.
Yeah, that's weird. Why not one and two?
Yeah.
Like, one for this, two for that.
One could look like a home decorating accident.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to. Yeah, you're right. I don't know. This seems precarious to me, but good luck to
it
him
does.
On that.
Front. Boy, I feel like those should be in a different order. It's like
it's like DEFCON levels, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It doesn't feel right when they say, "Oh, we're at DEFCON 1." Well, wait, is that the worst or the best, or is that what is 1? In fact, exactly. I still don't know. I think 1 is the worst, right? DEFCON 4. Like DEFCON 4.
It's reversed. It's the opposite of what you think it should be. Yes.
Whereas burns, first degree, second degree, third degree is the worst. Third and fourth degree, right?
It's the higher you go, the worse the burns are.
Yeah.
Release the hounds, yes.
Yeah, so DEFCON 1 is where you don't want to be. DEFCON 4 is where things are relatively peaceful.
Right, exactly.
Always
and you certainly
me.
Don't want somebody halfway through saying, all right, well, I've had enough of the four-stripe action. I'm going to wipe off one of my stripes and get some three-stripe action. You want that stuff to happen in the opposite order.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes.
I agree.
By the way, keeping a timer to make sure that we don't go too long on this subject.
No, yeah. We definitely shouldn't. We have some listeners who don't like it. Yeah. All right. Here's a story. Good luck to them, by the way. Like, I hope.
Yeah, good luck.
What I hope is you don't have nobody drops a tactical field nuke so that you don't have to have your orgy. That would be better.
I still feel like, you know, if the nuclear weapons hopefully don't happen, they're going to find some other reason. If Walmart closes on Black Friday, we're going to still do our 15,000-person mass orgy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. You know what? Don't let the man keep you down. You do what you want to do. Ukrainians should be free to do what they want to do. Okay?
That's right. You can Putin anywhere you want.
Putin. Freaking Putin. You know what I hope is they go, all right, we're launching this tactical nuke. Ready? Oh, whoops, it slipped. Oh, shit, it fell in his lap. Ah, damn it. We've blown up Vladimir Putin.
Right, if only the casualties would be confined to the one person.
Yeah, if we could just have it. I don't even want the Russian people to get hurt. and all of the of the Russian army who are like, we don't like this. I hate that we're doing it. Like all of you, I don't want any of you to get hurt. What I'd like to see is Putin accidentally trip over one of those things. He's out expecting. Here's what he does. He goes and inspects it. Very nice. You have very nice nuclear. Oh, I tripped on wire. Oh shit! Boom. That's it. That's what I want.
Oh, tracksuit too big. I tripped on a leg of tracksuit, fell into bomb.
Well, I guess that is end of conflict.
I sound like Boris Badenov. Where is Natasha?
Where is Moose? Give me Moose.
Get me Moose and Squirrel. Ah, bomb.
See, we have solutions. We're not just talking out of our butts. Yes. We know what's up.
That's right.
All right, here's your final story of the day. A teen, that's what they're called today, teens. Yeah.
Not a TikTok teen, but just a teen.
Just a teen. They're somewhere between 13 and 18 is the rule,
sure.
I think.
Sure.
A teen hilariously squeaks after accidentally swallowing a dog toy. This is really great, and I'm going to play audio from this. Okay?
This is so 1970s or 60s sitcom. Like, Gilligan did this at some point, didn't he? I could have sworn.
It feels like a Gilligan move, for sure. So here's this kid. I don't know how loud this is, so forgive me if it's quiet, but basically he swallowed a dog toy, and when you make him laugh, it squeaks. And he's in the waiting room at the ER, and this is what it sounded like. And this thing went like crazy, did crazy numbers on TikTok and Reels and Instagram and everything.
Oh, so now he is a TikTok teen.
Now he's a TikTok teen, whether he likes it or not. So here you go.
Jonathan, are you okay?
Every time he laughs. And he can't help it. He's so embarrassed. He hates it.
Oh, my God. That's awesome. And it's, I see a little picture of it. It is just like a little white plastic tube. So easy for that to get, stuck in your...
Yeah, and it's not like, whoops, it got loud all of a sudden. It's easy for something that small if you're dorking around and not paying attention.
Right.
You're going to get it in there. Look at this kid. He's just like a nice kid. He just effed up and put a dog toy in his mouth.
Yeah.
I did stuff like this.
You could see Nick doing this or Carter when she was younger.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Dude, I was putting those screwdriver bits in my nostril when I was his age.
Right.
And I still can't breathe right out of that thing. So,
Oh, God. BioCal says $20 says this starts a deadly TikTok challenge.
Oh, no.
I shudder to think of humanity, but you're probably correct.
Gosh dang it, dude. This will be like Tide Pods or whatever.
Right.
That ended, right? No one's doing that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And NyQuil marinated chicken or something, which probably nobody did until the FDA said, don't do this.
Yeah. That kind of came and went, right? I don't think anybody's still.
Yeah.
Unless, that is the thing we can count on, though. That's what's nice. Yes, somebody will have some dumb trend, whether it's a spoonful of pure cinnamon or this or anything else. Sure. But then people are over it in like 2 days.
Right.
Because we don't have the attention span for much longer than that. So.
Exactly. It's not a matter of it going awry and problems there. It's a matter of people just getting attracted by the next shiny object.
Yeah. And Icor says, I'm fine if stupid people die. The hard part is separating stupid from just... When you're a teenager, you do stupid shit because that's part of growing up. And that's how you learn. That's how you... make giant mistakes and then rectify them and all that. So it's harder for me to label that onto kids because I just think kids are going through things and that's their world. But if adults do stuff like this and they end up in the ER or worse, I have a harder time feeling as bad.
No,
it's true. I'm like, you should be over this by now. Like, not all of you are Steve-O. Quit pretending you're 50-year-old Steve-O.
Exactly. Quit trying to ingratiate yourself to your high school students.
Yeah. Yeah, stop it. Stop it, Steve-O wannabes.
Yep.
Anyway, he'll be okay. He was king of the hospital for the day. He was there, according to his mom. All the doctors and nurses would go in there and all be like, hey, can you make that noise for us? So
yeah, I'm sure. And I'm sure the doctors were like, hey, fetch me those forceps, would you? who's a good patient? Who's a good patient?
Okay, well, what does this say about me? I did this last week when Taylor was in there with the baby. Every time I go to the hospital, this is a little like my towel thing at hotels.
Yeah.
Every time I go to a hospital, doesn't matter when.
I steal an IV of full of some liquid.
No, I never do that. That's weird. But I did. Good. But I always get a little handful of the gloves out of the glove dispenser, the rubber gloves. And I always blow one up in the car.
And okay. Then yeah.
Bounce it around and screw around or whatever. And I've been doing
You don't do the Howie Mandel thing?
No, not on my head. No, I never did that.
Oh,
I think that's where he got his
freshly shaved head. I should do that.
Oh, you could totally do it, dude.
Yeah. Let me.
Are you freshly shaved?
Hold
today?
On. I've got some. Yeah. Well, yesterday. Hold on one second.
All right, grab one. This is. Oh, you guys, if you were here live, listeners at home, you'd see Brian do what he's about to do for the world. He's about to take one for the team. But chat for real, like I just can't help it. I see him and I just take two or three of them and I go. Oftentimes I put them on before I even leave the hospital. I'm wearing a pair. I got another one in my pocket.
So now these are the ones that I buy in bulk, major bulk for my,
For 3D print stuff, 3D right?
3D printer. Yeah. Cause the resin and stuff, like if I'm changing the resin in my printer and right now it's currently printing a transparent red, Kyber crystal holder.
Did someone order that from you? Did you get an order?
Someone ordered, yeah, transparent red.
Nice.
I want to get this thing good and stretched out. I don't know how much of my head this is going to go over.
I feel pretty good about your chances given... Your head is not as big as mine. I would never get that over my head. You have a normal size head.
I have a pretty big head, Scott.
You do, but it's in proportion to the rest of you. You've got a good proportional head.
Yeah, okay.
I don't.
All right, let's see here. All right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn my headphones this way.
All right.
So I can still hear you.
Okay, excellent.
If you're looking for Lando, he went that
way. I was just going to say you look like... Wait, what was his name? Lobot. What is it? Lobot. I always think MODOK, which is obviously wrong. Oh, look at this. What's going on? Oh, shit. That must have hurt. Did it break?
It broke, yeah. It broke in a way that, like, it broke right up the thumb line. So, it's gonna, yeah.
It's just so stretchy. Will it blow up now? Can you make it?
Hold on. Ow, jeez. It keeps snapping because there's no little rolled up rim on the bottom.
Yeah, there's no rim.
Because it tore off.
Yeah. Oh. You look like Zoidberg. You got Zoidberg with a burnt face.
That was amazing.
Ooh, I found the sandwich in the dumpster.
We do for you people.
That's
right. First I have to drink Kellogg's Eggnog with rum in it. And
yep. How much of that you got left?
Half a jar.
That's good, because then you can spread it throughout the entire celebratory period. You know?
Yeah, I doubt it'll last much past Thanksgiving. It's not even past Halloween, let's be honest.
Yeah.
It
won't last past the next visit to Dave's house, is my guess.
The problem is it's a nighttime kind of drink, right? I'm not drinking in the morning, and that's when I have my coffee. And if I have coffee late at night, I have the caffeine issues and I can't get to sleep, but that's when I'd want to try it in there. So I guess I have to make decaf and try it in that. And
maybe you try this mushroom business. Maybe it's good.
Yeah, maybe a little Appalachian sipping cream in my mushroom water.
Your mushroom water. That sounds real good there, Cletus. All right. Speaking of Cletus, we're going to take a break when we come back. Bill Duran, often known as the Cletus of the Pacific Northwest, will be here. He'll join us and talk about making things. After that, Bobby with some science. All that coming up after this song from Brian.
All right, well, let's get to some nerdcore. We haven't played some new nerdcore on the show in a long time, but the Syndicate sent me over this one. This is a band called Q-Bomb, and it's just Q-B-O-M-B. No hyphen, no space, no nothing. Q-B-O-M-B. Q-Bomb. They have a brand new album that's coming out the end of this month called Hyperpunk, with an exclamation point. They're going to have a Halloween album release show on October 30th in Los Angeles, if you're in that area and you like this. You're totally going to dig this. This is one of the singles from that album. It is Dire Break. Here is Q-Bomb. Q-Bomb.
something special for the man in your life this Hanukkah? Call his doctor and schedule his prostate exam.
ShitOutOfLuck.com.
The Morning Stream.
How dare you talk to me that way?
And we're back, everyone. Hey, I need to know who that was so I can write
it down. I will tell you. You loved it, didn't you? That was so good. Yeah, that's Q-Bomb. They have a brand new album called Hyperpunk. Hyperpunk, also all one word, followed by an exclamation point. That is the song Dire Break.
Nice. Dire, money for nothing, chicks for free. Dire Break. There you go.
That's right. That's what Mark Knopfler decided to take in 1998. Mm-hmm. It was a Dire Break.
Can they even play that song anymore? Because it's got that.
It's got the homophobic slur.
Yeah.
Even though he's playing a character, but that didn't stop people from getting mad at Randy Newman. Even though his "I Love L.A." is a character. No, I'm sorry. Short People is a character, right?
I forgot about that. I always forget that's even his song for whatever reason. But
yeah, I wonder if they did a new version of the song. I know that there's been versions that just have that word taken out, and he says it twice if I remember correctly.
Yeah, because he says the little F word has his own jet airplane. The little F word is a millionaire.
Yeah.
So what you should do is say the little rich boy. Maybe just do that. Say the little rich boy's got his own jet airplane. The little rich boy's got a million. You could do that.
Imagine, yeah, you could do something.
Yeah, little rich boy is not offensive.
I mean, you could replace it with the other F word, and it would be fine.
Oh, see, there you go. Keep it raw. Keep it edgy, but
that's right.
You know. Push it out of the mean zone.
Exactly. And I think if I remember correctly in the music in the video for Money for Nothing, because you've got the two Lawnmower Man era CGI guys.
Oh, they're so bad.
They're watching. Isn't the Prince When Doves Cry video with him crawling on the floor out of the bathtub
on the TV?
What they show when
it's on a little TV, right? I think
it's on a little TV when they're saying that. Yeah.
Which is weird. I wonder do you have to get permission for that? They have call Prince and go, dude, can we borrow your
I don't know. Because they've all got the little MTV, that Bellwee font. Was it Bellwee? I'm trying to remember what the font was.
It was something like that. I know that, you know, you look back on it and go, oof, that CG is so bad. But at the time, I remember being blown away by it.
Yeah.
I remember going, what? This is the future.
I remember going to an arcade and playing Dactyl Nightmare.
Yeah.
At the time.
Yeah, man.
It's like, this is so cool. Yeah, Cable, K-A-B-E-L. That's right.
It felt like it was never going to get better than that, but it did. A lot better.
Oh, thank goodness. Yeah.
A lot better.
I mean, I already feel like my Quest is great, but now I'm seeing stuff with the Quest Pro 2 or whatever it's called. And
That thing's too expensive. $1,500. It's too much.
Yeah, that's not happening. It's not happening.
Well, maybe this guy will build us one.
Your bat cave's open there, Bill.
It's Bill Duran, who's, you know, probably not going to build us a VR headset, but he is going to come on the show and talk about the world of making things, as he always does. Bill, welcome back.
Good to be here. Happy to see Brian's new mashup cosplay, that Lobot Dr. Zoidberg cosplay is going to be a hit at Dragon.
Yeah, it's
going to
be huge, right?
If you're looking for Lando, he's over there.
That's pretty good. See, this is, I like the mashups more than I like good, I like good cosplay. I respect good cosplay.
Right, it would be Loberg.
Yeah, Loberg.
Yeah, that's such a cool idea. Actually, I really like that idea a lot. And you should do it.
Because they're both like little sidekicks to the head honcho.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And look how cheaply you can make it. You've already got the costume half done.
The hard parts are done. Yeah.
Yeah. I've already got my costume this year, which will do the unveiling on Halloween in just under 2 weeks.
Wait 2 weeks. All right. Well, Bill's here and he's probably got a little something he's towed with him. Bill, what are you working on these days? What's going on?
So today I wanted to talk about the beginning stages of a project, because I am elbows deep in the planning of a new project.
Yeah.
So I'm making you guys watch the show Arcane, League of Legends?
Oh,
show?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yes. Amazing. Oh, God, that's such a gorgeous show. It's what made me not care about Blade Runner Black Lotus or whatever it was called.
Yeah, it was good. Really good.
So in Arcane, there are these cool mechanical butterflies, and Jinx takes a bunch of them and modifies them, and I won't spoil it, but they're really cool. I recommend people go check it out.
Sure.
But it's like a handheld-sized mechanical butterfly, so I want to make one of those. And I've been planning for the last week or so, and I want to go through everything I've been doing so far, because I haven't made anything yet, but I've done a ton of work. It's going to make everything else better.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So let's dive in. The first thing will be gathering references. So in the past, I've talked about gathering reference images, which is super useful.
Yep.
But you might also need things like measurements or color references.
Which is difficult when it's not a physical prop that you can see at an auction or see, photos, auction photos.
Well, I assume like even with movies, like live action movies, it's easier because you have humans next to things and you can create scale with that. But when it's animated, even though these characters are somewhat proportional, you still have a little guesswork there, right?
Sure, yeah. Now, 3D animated stuff, they tend not to cheat as much as far as scaling goes. But in 2D animated stuff, from shot to shot, a prop might be twice as big. It's a challenge.
Yeah,
So what I ended up doing is watching all of Arcane again and screen capping all the shots that had the butterfly in it. And I even got a shot of Jinx holding one of them so that I could use her hand and fingers as a scale reference.
Oh, nice. Cool. Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very cool.
So that was the first step, was just gathering our reference images. And then I drew the whole thing by hand on paper. Actually, I drew it a couple of times. And I draw almost every single project I make. Mm-hmm. These are drawings that are going to help me figure out what materials I might need. I will use the drawings as a reference during the build to sort of double check my work. And it's so cheap and easy to make changes on paper and pencil. It's a lot harder to make changes later when the material you're working with is wood or plastic or metal. So I cannot recommend drawing your project first enough. Even if I'm making like shop furniture, like a stand for a piece of a tool or something, I draw it, I put dimensions on it, and then when I'm building it, I can go back and double check that drawing. So drawing is such an important step.
It's essential. You'd say.
Oh, yeah. It's fun. Like, I have a really... I love this little drawing. I made a really cool side view. I'll tweet it later. But I made a cool side view of my butterfly, and it's a neat drawing. Yeah. I love blueprints.
I miss the days... Like, one of the classes that I had to take in art school for a couple semesters was a... not CAD, but it was like a dimension drawing or something like that.
Yeah, drafting, technical drafting.
Thank you. That is the word I was looking for. And so we had our, we had our big wooden boards, and we'd have our T square that went up and down the side, and we basically have to do this. And it made it such a cool, it made it such an easy way to do different elevations of the same object and see, okay, well, if I make this window into this lantern that I'm making 12 millimeters by 52 millimeters, then on this side it's going to be that big compared to the top. And I kind of wish there was I know I could just use Illustrator for that.
Sure, it
Really, really damn easy, but I kind of miss the tactile feel of doing it by hand. Yeah.
So I do that, I took my drawing that I made of this butterfly and I threw it in Inkscape, which is the free Illustrator.
I haven't heard of
Inkscape.
And
I trace it all. So I did end up drawing it on the computer as well. And then it'll go into Fusion. But you're right, that tactile. And I took a ton of drafting and architectural classes in high school.
Yeah.
And we did that. We had all the... I kind of miss it.
I know. I do too.
my mom's uncle was an architect, and when he passed away, she got his drafting table, this giant wooden architect's drafting table.
Yeah.
And I have claimed it to inherit it next. Yeah.
It's all yours.
Nice.
All right. Yeah. So next, after you make your drawings, acquiring materials is the big one. And something I like to do, because I already have a lot of materials on hand, is I'll try and design a project to use the materials I already have, which can be really great. Otherwise, you got to buy new stuff. And that's what I've been doing. I did a lot of that last week. I had to buy a bunch of brass for this butterfly. Mm. I had to figure out the dimensions I needed. So I have some bar stock. I have some tubes. tubes that nest into one another to make the legs. Very exciting.
Nice.
Cool.
But I spent an afternoon going to different websites, checking the specs on the materials, figuring out what I wanted, figuring out how much I wanted to spend. And these materials are going to dictate a lot of the process moving forward. So it's another place where you can save yourself a lot of time and headaches by buying the right stuff.
I think you're doing a thing I'm glad you're doing with your description today, and that is this. There's a feeling out there. I don't want to generalize too much, but I think when people think of projects like this, they think, well, I'll just get a reference image and then I just, I can trace this and do that. And then boom, I've got my thing. And what I'm hearing from you, and I'm a big believer in this as well. If you really want it, if you want that end result to be rad, you've got to do all this stuff. Like, even though you're talking about ways of saving time and not really cutting corners, but you know what I mean? Like making the most of your time. You're still saying, do the time, do the work. Like, don't just jump in and make the gun or make the thing or the helmet or whatever. Like, really go to town on all this stuff so that you've got the best possible outcome. And I don't know.
Right.
Maybe everybody just does that, and I'm assuming they don't, but it seems like a lot of people don't think that way.
Well, especially with replica prop work, like, I know what the thing is supposed to look like, right? Like, it's very objective.
Right.
Most of the time, it's very objective. You can compare the thing. So the goal is I have a very clear goal. And as I get better at making stuff, I get better at matching that goal. And doing this kind of prep work, I think, is instrumental in getting closer to that goal.
Yeah.
It's almost like I've built, by the time I'm actually touching the materials, I've built this thing in my head 3 or 4 times. When I did my Vasha Stampede gun, I drew it. I took millions of reference images. I drew it from multiple sides. I printed it out in 2D, just a 2D side view in several sizes to see which size felt good in my hand. But I also worked on this thing when I was trying to sleep. Like, at the time, I was having a hard time sleeping, so laying in bed, I would just work on the problem in my head. There's mechanical solutions I had to figure out, and you can work on a build when you're sitting still. You can work on it in your head and solve problems in your head, which, again, way cheaper than when you're 3D printing stuff by the time you got into those last stages.
Yeah, use your head prototyping instead of your material prototyping. Sure.
The last prototype stage, obviously not necessary for everything, but I 3D model almost everything. Obviously, the project I'm working on is going to use some CNC, or if it's going to use some 3D printing, then you'll have to 3D model it.
Yeah.
So my butterfly is going to get 3D modeled. But it can be handy for any project. And I know a lot of woodworkers, like our buddy Mark Spag, they'll 3D model their furniture project in SketchUp ahead of time so they can pre-visualize the whole thing. But also they can put together a cut list for their wood from that 3D model, which, again, saves you a ton of time. And also that helps you buy the right materials in the right amount.
Mm.
Yeah. And you've built the whole thing in your head once, which is so valuable.
It's really, that is really a smart way to do it. I can do that till the cows come home and I'll print it. I'll do the first prototype and I'll still have to make a bunch of changes. Oh, sure. And
yeah. I thought SketchUp had gone away. Is SketchUp still a thing?
I
guess Google sold it or something, right? Because Google owned it for a minute.
I need to get back to Fusion 360 because I know that that's a better one. But I've been using Shaper 3D, which is a paid deal. But God, it's so easy to use. It's just so stupid expensive. It's like $20 a month or something. And I can justify it if I'm constantly making new things to sell on the Etsy store, but I'm not. So I need to get back to Fusion 360.
Interesting.
I like Fusion, although I haven't tried them all, but I like Fusion.
Yeah.
Everyone's a fan of Fusion 360. It's a big one. Well, nice. I can't wait to see progress on this thing. Is this your next big one that you're doing?
Yeah. We'll have a video, and I'm super stoked. It's going to be brass. Ugh,
oh my
brass.
Gosh, brass is awesome. What's the timeline? Do you figure how long do you think this project's going to take?
A couple weeks, maybe. We'll see. Okay. We're going to be traveling next week, so I'm not sure, but 2 or 3 weeks, maybe.
Very nice. We'll see. Very, very nice. Well, there you go, everybody. Send us your thoughts and feelings on some of this stuff. I always like questions for Bill. So,
oh, yeah, me too.
themorningstream@gmail.com. If you guys have any questions about his process or a cool idea you have, you wonder how viable it is, whatever, please do. But Bill, before you go, you always have a little extra link for us. What
I
are we
do.
Doing?
I have a fun little video here. This is from Barnaby Dixon. I don't know if you guys watch Barnaby.
I did. I watched, like, boy, in the 70s, every week, solving crimes, Barnaby Dixon.
This video. Was,
oh, yeah, old Barnaby. Yeah. always gets his Barnaby, man every time, yeah.
This guy's a puppeteer, and he not only is he builds his own puppets. He's really amazing. He's a musician. But he built a little electronic music rig that he can play with the puppet. So the puppet's feet step on the buttons. But he had to modify all the buttons so that the puppet would have an easier time touching them.
What a trippy looking cool puppet that is.
I feel like it's going to start singing, "You remind me of a babe," at any moment now.
Yeah,
like,
no kidding. That's awesome. So wait a minute. So it's a hand puppet though, right?
Yeah. Okay. So the video is a composite of him talking and a video of him with the puppet.
Right.
Yeah. So there are not two people there, but he does a really clever job of filming it in a way that he gets to interact with his own puppet.
That's so cool.
I like the third season of Stranger Things when he starts working at the ice cream store.
Yeah, that's a good, you know, people really resonate with that season.
Does look a little bit like Steve.
Yeah, a little bit. I love that. This is great.
So cool. This is really, really cool.
What a neat thing that is. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. All right. Sometimes you bring us a bonus link that blows my mind. This is one of those.
Yeah.
And once you go back through his back archive of stuff, you'll do, and listen to the music and stuff, because he's also a talented musician.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah. Barnaby Dixon.
Save some talent for the rest of us, Barnaby.
That's right, Barnaby. Guy, Stranger Things looking Barnaby. All right, that's it. Bill Duran, everybody. He is at punishedprops.com if you're looking for all this stuff. And, of course, follow him on Twitter. His name on there is Chinbeard. Bill, have a great week. We'll see you next time.
Later, friends. Cool.
Bye now. Later, friends.
Very cool. Very cool.
The Later Friends, coming to Cartoon Network this fall. All right.
With voices by Frank Welker.
That's right. Finally, Frank Welker getting some work.
Got some work.
Yep. All right. Bobby.
Bobby.
I got the double B's today, and I always forget who's next.
I wonder if I got distracted and I already put sugar in my cup for my coffee. I guess we're going to find out.
Oh, have you done that before?
Bobby in here,
have you ever doubled it up before? Like where you got too much?
Oh, yeah. Because I put sugar in it and then I get, you know, and then we start talking about something. I completely forget that I put sugar in it.
Oh, no. Well, that'll be fun for you. Let's see how, you know, how diabetic you can get in about 5 minutes. That'd be fantastic. All right. Check this out.
Science.
Hey, science. It is science. And with us to talk science is Bobby Frankenberger, who joins us on Tuesdays to talk a little bit about some science out there. Bobby, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm feeling a little... I'm getting over... I just got back from a flight lesson.
Oh, how'd that go?
There's like a weird transition. Like, it feels like two completely different experiences. Like, it's hard when I'm up in flying,
yeah, mm-hmm,
it feels like a total, like, and then I'm back down on the ground and I think back on it, it doesn't feel like there's no smooth transition between those experiences in my brain.
Is it like that feeling, I mean, I haven't inline skated in years, but that feeling your first steps walking after you've been inline skating for a whole afternoon, where it's like, I feel like I'm moving all weird and slow.
Oh, or like if you've been on a boat for a while.
Yeah. That's a good comparison. That's probably a better comparison.
Yeah.
I actually don't have that feeling for people who are not
over a certain age. Yeah, exactly.
I get that. When we got home from our boat, we had the sensation that we were still kind of rocking for about 2 days. Mm. It was weird.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Today did feel a little weird. We practiced some maneuvers called... they're called ground reference maneuvers. And basically, I was just spinning around in circles over and over again. In fact, I'm sending you a picture
of
the track.
Whoa!
That's what I did today.
It's some crazy Ivans in the air.
Yeah. Basically, for podcast listeners, I was just doing like S-turns, like... swirl it, like looping around over and over again and doing these big wide turns and basically turning the plane constantly, and it really can take it out of you.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome, dude. Well, okay. Well, I'm glad you're here. You're back down to earth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, grounded.
Here to talk about, I actually have a little bit of just a fun little thing to talk about. Our good friend, Dr. Nikki Ackerman sent me a paper saying, she was like, oh, this might be fun to talk about on TMS. And it was it's a paper called The Perception of Paleontology in Commercial Off-the-Shelf Video Games.
Oh, wow. And, okay.
How many of these are begin with the words Jurassic Park?
Yeah, no kidding, right? I'll put a link to it. For anybody who wants to look at it, I'll put a link to it in the chat. But it was basically just a sort of fun little look at the history of paleontology depiction in video games and where it's come, where it is now, how accurate or inaccurate it is, and what science communicators and scientists in general can learn from this in order to better use video games to teach science in general.
Sure.
Or maybe just mitigate the bad science that is accidentally communicated through video games, you know?
Sure. Which exists. Plenty of it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I this infographic. I already love the fact that Yoshi is in here.
Hey.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So that's one of the dinosaurs. And I put another quick image into the chat there. I don't, just so you can look at it if you wanted to share it with anybody. But it's like a timeline, because that paper has, in the link that I put in the chat, there's an image that shows a timeline of dinosaurs in video games all the way from which is already on the face of it is just really funny to me that somebody thought that this is an important thing that we need to look
yes,
at, you know?
Right, yeah. Right. It's a well done, it's a very well done infographic or timeline, by the way.
I love stuff like that.
I do too.
Just like that looks. It's just super, super cool. This is interesting. I don't know why I never thought about this before, but.
Well, so science depiction in general in video games can often be weird, but they're looking at paleontology specifically because so much of depiction, first of all, when we think of paleontology in video games, it's almost all dinosaurs, right?
Right.
Sure.
Dinosaurs are not the only thing in paleontology.
No.
But it's almost always depicted as dinosaurs. And some of them, most video games do kind of a not great job of depicting, and they broke it down into categories of the tropes that are used to depict dinosaurs in video games. So the first trope, the most common one, they said, is ancient death machines, the monstrification of dinosaurs, right? Where the developers and designers of the game will change and exaggerate the appearance and behavior of animals to make them appear more aggressive and dangerous.
Yeah.
And they say that while this is, of course, fun gameplay,
right,
it misleads people about how ancient animals lived, how they looked, how they behaved.
Do you think that the job of, how do I put this? Like, if you're going to play a game like Turok, let's use that as an example. You're literally fighting big, scary dinosaurs. Or you're playing a game like Ark where you're trying to tame them.
Turok not even mentioned in here, and you think it would be, but I guess
it's mentioned in there.
I thought I saw it.
Okay.
Yeah, 90s. Okay, yeah.
It's not on the timeline, but it's definitely mentioned in the paper.
Oh, in the article. Okay. Yeah.
Gotcha. Oh, no, here it is. Yeah. It is on the timeline. 1997, oh, first-person shooter, Turok Dinosaur Hunter. Yeah.
I guess he's a hunter, not a paleontologist.
When he's not doing science.
Turok, dinosaur paleontologist, doesn't have quite the same.
But the whole, my point is, so much in gaming is focused on the gameplay, on the tone or the cinematicness or the whatever they're trying to achieve so that players are engaged. Do you think that games need to do a better job of being more science focused or a better job of saying, hey, we know this is all hootie patootie, and so you should know that going in. Don't expect a science lesson.
That's
here.
A really good question, because that's one of the things that I think of is what responsibility do game developers really have, right?
Yeah.
If you're just making a fun game, you know, like how far do we extend this to other things? You know, you're famously, Scott, you're into chore core games, right?
Yeah, I love them.
But what responsibility does Power Wash Simulator have to make this a 100% accurate power washing experience, right?
Sure. That's a great question, because so I started playing a game called Electrical Simulator, or Electrician Simulator, which is, no offense to electricians, but the idea of doing actual electrical work in a home or something is not interesting to me at all. What is interesting to me is taking that as a construct and then gamifying it, at least enough gamification that it feels like I'm actually having fun doing a thing that would normally be very tedious and a ton of work and stuff I don't understand. And so a lot of people have come to me after I talked about that game on Core and said, so am I going to learn? I would love to learn actual stuff. And I said, there are some things there like polarity and, you know, how to, you know, grounding matters and turning off your fuses before you do certain things, and how to test a light bulb without killing yourself and all these kind of things. Right. Like, there's a bunch of that in there, but it's like, what matters more is that I've got a controller, I can zoom into a thing, and using an A button, I can do a thing. And like, they do keep it a game. And that's what I love about Chore Core games, is they're not really simulations of actual work. They're gamified versions of those things. And so do they have a responsibility? I don't know if they do. Do they?
I don't know that they do have a responsibility, but I do think that there's like thinking about where you are on that spectrum of realistic to completely gamifying is an interesting question, because it has implications about teaching things. There's different types of learning that they even talk about in this paper. There's implicit learning, which is the unconscious learning of something that you just happens while you're doing it, right?
Right.
So that could be it could be obvious with certain types of games, like I've been playing a lot of Oxygen Not Included, which requires a lot of thinking about temperature and physics and how different materials transfer temperature and stuff like that. And so
that's a great game.
Or it is a really great game, and it requires you to think about like different gases and their densities and which ones rise and which ones sink, and same thing with liquids. So you unconsciously learn things like carbon dioxide is more dense than oxygen, for example. That's unconscious learning.
Right.
And then there's tangential learning that they talk about, which is sort of like a semi-conscious learning that involves self-education by being exposed to something, right?
Right.
So an example of that might be how when I played a bunch of City Skylines, in that game, you reach a point where your city can't grow very well unless you've got traffic under control. So I, on my own, sought out like information that teaches the theory of traffic design and traffic lights and how you design roadways and stuff like that. That would be more like tangential learning that you're seeking out in order to improve your ability in a game, right?
Right.
And I think you see a lot of this in simulation type game. Both of those that I just mentioned are simulation type games, right?
Sure, sure.
And so Chore Core games fall into that. But does a game like Tomb Raider, mm-hmm. you know, have any responsibility when it chases you down with a T-Rex, you know?
Well, this has been a long, I mean, I remember conversations years ago about this. It still comes up once in a while, but like when the U.S. Army contracted the game America's Army to be developed, it was basically a recruitment tool, but it played a lot like a more simish, but you know, played a lot like your Call of Duty or Medal of Honor and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a real question of ethics at that point to say, all right, well, this is clearly a recruitment tool.
Right.
But can you say it's an actual training tool? I don't know. Like, did that really make anyone a better soldier because they played a video game and they played it with a keyboard and a mouse, or they played it with a controller? That's not the same as a big, heavy M4 in your hands out on a battlefield where you're stuck in a trench trying to figure out where the fire's coming from. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not the same.
Right.
So, I feel like that one is like full of all sorts of moral quandaries, whereas something like how come the dinosaur, you know, was wearing, you know, why did the dinosaur have a Gatling gun strapped to it is a little less less of a problem.
I think that one is a trick. The one, the example you just gave is with the recruitment tool is a tricky ethical question, right? Because you're how much are you just, how much are you using it as a recruiting tool versus, you know, desensitizing or brainwashing people into becoming killing machines? Right. Who knows? So that's that. But when you talk about paleontology, I guess there's other questions. So an example that they give in the paper of a game that does a good job, they say, of being a fun game, but also educating and depicting things are games like Animal Crossing.
Mm-hmm.
Where part of what you have to do for, you know, the owl guy Blathers, you have to go around and collect fossils
Blathers.
Yeah. Yeah. Always sleeping that guy too.
I know, what a butt. Hate him.
So what they do really well in there is you put them in a museum. You can go visit the museum. You can read about the fossils, and it's very accurate information. It's also very diverse. It's not just your Stegosaurus and T-Rex. Right. There's all sorts of very different ones. And they make it really – so, yes, you can dig in. And that's similar to, like, how a lot of games will provide journals or diaries that you can just go and on your own seek out extra information through the game. But they, like – They call out Animal Crossing in a good way because they don't just provide it as like a place for, you know, nerdy people like me to go and explore and read. Right. But Blathers will actually, if you go talk to him, and when you give him something, it doesn't matter if you just skip past it. He gives you fun little anecdotes and fun little in his speech with you. He like has little fun things he says about the fossils that you give them as well, which provide their own type of unconscious or tangential learning, right?
Yeah. I felt like that game in particular does a pretty good job of this, of going, okay, well, you went and found this, and yes, that was very gamey. That was, you know, in the ground, and how did you know? Well, there was a little crack in the ground. That's how I knew. And, you know, like some of that stuff's very hand-wavy, but when you go talk to Blathers, he's like, yeah, that's a such and such, which you want to learn more? And you say, yeah. And he's like, okay, well, these were found in the blah, 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 and they lived at a certain time. Like, they're not just shooting out bullcrap. That's like actual information about those.
But we're also teaching kids that if you find fossils, you can go and sell it to those two brothers instead of taking it to a museum.
Capitalism. That's right.
But then there's other things that they say that are more problematic. Or I don't know if problematic is the right word because that term has its own baggage and for other reasons. But it's like tricky problems with certain games. Like they talk about how you might a game might try to give the veneer of sciencyness, but misrepresent the science. So an example is, did you ever play that, that game, what was it called? It's where you like created a creature and as a microorganism.
Tamagotchi?
No. The one from the dude that made The Sims.
Spore.
Spore.
Spore. That's what it was. Spore. Exactly.
C-Man?
Or as I called it, the penis generator. Because that thing was... That thing was infamous for that. People would use that creator, and all they would do is make that all day. And at some point, I thought, well, did they know this? Did they know when they were making this game that people were just going to make wieners? I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was too early, and they hadn't quite become so cynical about...
Hey, by the way, if anyone's paying any attention, that was the only time I've mentioned the word wiener in 2 days. Anyway, go ahead. Go ahead, continue on.
Oh, we need a wiener counter.
Mad Max one, yes.
Yeah. So in Spore, they're using evolution as a sort of like mechanic, and on the surface, it's kind of like, oh, this is evolution, right? But it misleads people into thinking that it's, you know, because it's in the game, it's a very directed, deliberate process as a player, and that's not how evolution works, right?
Sure.
So that's an example of what they're saying, where the unconscious learning might happen in a way that you maybe don't want it to.
Sure.
So.
Sure. This is complicated though, right? Because
yeah,
a fun game, an educational game, doesn't sound like a fun game.
Right.
But sometimes stuff can happen. Like, I really appreciate this about Assassin's Creed Origins. And I think maybe Odyssey did this as well. But Origins had a mode. They added it later. It was something they promised in the beginning, and then it came as a patch. But and it still works, and it's amazing. I highly recommend it. But basically, it's historical mode or something. I forget the name. Or museum mode.
They call it tourist mode, I think.
Something like that. Yeah. So basically, you run it in that mode, and now it's no longer a game where you're going to get killed or have to shoot anybody or assassinate anyone. Now you're just touring the landmarks of the actual ancient Egypt that area.
So cool.
And it gives you all this info. Like, you'll see the Sphinx and it'll say built during the blah 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 Pharaoh Joe Bob whatever did the blah, blah, blah. And it tells you all this like background information, and it's all of course very visual and high aesthetics and everything. It's an amazing way to see that stuff.
I assume that you can do that thing where you walk close to a group of people and kind of blend into an existing tour group and not have to pay the ticket fee.
No.
So you just kind of blend in with that tour
group. I like where your head's at, but no, it does not do that. In fact, it's just you. This is a single player experience, and it's just you running around seeing it all as if you were in ancient Egypt. It's really, really rad.
That sounds really cool, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, they actually call out Assassin's Creed in the paper as well for that. And I found it. It's called the Discovery Tour.
Yeah.
They say that because a challenge with doing something like that is making it clear and distinguishing between what is entertainment and what is education. And they point out that Assassin's Creed does a good job of that because it's a mode that you have to enter into. Yeah. So it makes a very clear demarcation. Like, this is the education part. We're not just doing entertainment anymore. We're not, just talking to Socrates and assuming that this is what he said for real in ancient Greece.
Well, right. But, so this is a perfect time for a very fast baby break. Come here, bring this baby in there. Everybody gets
I
to
love
see
baby,
the baby
breaks.
Yeah, baby breaks are good. May as well get this out of the way. So hold on a second. Here we go. This is Phoebe's introduction to the TMS audience. You got to hold her up.
No kidding. Is this?
Oh,
is
it's
this
a new baby.
Brand Phoebe's new baby.
First internet appearance.
Here, I'll hold her. Okay. This is first first internet appearance. Here, I'm going to just put her right here.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Scaring me. Oh, my gosh.
She's asleep.
Yo, click that like and subscribe button.
Yeah, do it.
You've got your YouTube thumbnail right there.
Yeah, there it is.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Yep. Chop her out of there.
Except you had
set.
To get, you're supposed to get Phoebe to like have
drop,
a surprise.
Or drop the F word or something like that. Yeah. We'll work on it. She's so cute. It's killing me. Was she here for a while?
Oh, man.
Okay. Awesome. All right. Sorry. So we've come full circle. Dinosaurs, babies, and now... Bobby, how would you sum things up today?
Basically, it's just an interesting paper, and it's a nice something to think about. Like, how do games do this? And I don't think that I'm trying to make a judgment as to what responsibility games have. Games are just making fun games, right? But games people are doing that.
Yeah.
And it's
they're
just
making stuff
to
that
think
sells,
about.
Right? If you're gonna sell a thing, you got to make a thing that sells. So yeah,
exactly.
You're probably less concerned about. Unfortunately, you're less concerned about what you're actually doing. But I think this stuff sneaks in. Like, Origins is a good example of that. They didn't have to make that, and they made it free.
Yeah.
You have to pay for it. So did most players mess with that? Probably not. But it was a neat thing to do for no other reason other than to say, hey, there's a chance to actually show this cool world in a more realistic way. And I really appreciate when somebody, when a game does that. So more of that,
and you
please.
Got games completely on the other end of the spectrum, like Kerbal Space Program, where you literally have to get a degree in.
Yeah, that game. It's deceptive because you're like, Kerbals, what are they? Oh, they're goofy-looking, alien-looking guys.
These cute little guys trying to go into space, and then you spend the first 10 hours, you can't even get a rocket off the ground because you forgot to get your space scientist degree,
Yeah, you forgot to get your PhD and then work at NASA for 6 years as a rocket scientist. That game is crazy. The fact that
I do love that game, though.
Well, I think it's such a weird combination of, like, it's abstract in the visual way or in the kind of, like, Kerbals and all that. But then you play it and you realize, oh, this is serious. This is like serious business. And somehow that combination made for one of the best-selling, most revered indie games ever. Like, people love that game.
Yeah.
And it's barely a game. It's more of a, like, talk about your chore core that's actually a chore. That's the game. And if you love that stuff, it won't be
I would have times where I would spend, I'd be like, all right, I'm going to play Kerbal Space Program, and I would never even open the program. I would just spend all day on Wikipedia.
Yep. Yep.
Learning the rocket equation.
Yeah, if you want to get into some deep stuff, go watch like full builds on YouTube. They take forever, and then when they finally get it, it's like you'd think that person was a genius. That thing is insane. Like, it's not my kind of game, but I really respect it for what it is.
I love that game. And there's a new one coming next year, and I'm really excited about that. But anyway,
nice.
That education in video games is a cool thing to think about in communicating science. But
I agree.
I know there's a baby that you probably want to get to.
Oh, so. I'm fine. Yeah, they're going to be here. They'll be here after the show. So, well, Bobby, the pleasure is always ours having you here. Of course, you have a show. It's called All Around Science. I'd love it if more people knew about it. So tell them where to get it.
Yes, it's called All Around Science. Me and my co-host, Maura, we talk about science news all the time. The latest thing in science news that we talked about just this episode that came out yesterday was about the Nobel Prizes. We focused on one, the Nobel Prize in Physics. Because it's very complicated. Physics is complicated.
It is. It's been my experience. Who knew? So, yeah.
Yeah. Who knew?
Who knew?
I think the physicists knew. They've been trying to tell us, but we weren't listening.
They probably do, yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
But yeah, it was pretty cool. Nobel Prize in Physics for a group of scientists who did what all physicists like to do and proved Einstein wrong.
Mm.
And so we talk about that, dig into quantum mechanics a little bit and do my best to try to explain quantum mechanics, which is always hard.
You think
because I barely understand it.
Do you think physicists have they like music, right? Do you think physicists would be into music sometimes? I mean, they'd have.
No,
their
I
own
don't
taste.
Think. I think that's how they weed you out in physics school. If you like music, you're out.
The reason I ask is I just wonder what a physicist likes. Like, what are they listening to? What's their playlist? Are they
well,
like?
My dad, the physicist, listens to Crowded House. He listens to classical music. He listens to...
Now, is that Crowded House thing because you turned him on to it?
Yeah, because I introduced him to Crowded House, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. So, does any of the... You know what I was trying to get to? I was trying to get to an Olivia Newton-John Let's Get Physical reference, but it's just not going to happen.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Bobby, have a fantastic week. We'll see you next time. All right.
Sorry, you need to let me know that that's where you're headed, and I'll help you get
no,
there.
No, no, no. It was a terrible idea on my part to begin with, so that's no one's fault but my own. thank you, Bobby, and we're going to now get out of here real quick. Tonight, play retro, 3:30 Mountain Time. I say tonight, it's the afternoon. We are going to be doing an episode in the Halloween spirit and cover the old 16-bit era games, also arcade games, known as the Splatterhouse series.
Yeah.
Ooh, a lot of people very fond of those. They were also kind of forbidden fruit for a lot of kids growing up. Mm. If you were one of those kids, you might like this look back on the controversial titles that were Splatterhouse 1 and 2 and possibly a third. I can't remember. And that weird Japanese spinoff thing, which we'll talk about as well. Anyway, talk about no education in video games. That'll be tonight. Play retro. And wherever you get your podcast.
It teaches you how to be Jason Voorhees in a haunted house.
That's right. Co-starring our very own Monday, Wednesday, Brian Dunaway. He'll be there with me today. So check that out. We are on Patreon at patreon.com/TMS. Without you, there's no show. That's truly the truth. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Literally without our patronage, we're not making this.
Truth.
So if you like this show, you need to get over there. Frogpants.com/TMS for everything else. Brian, you got anything else before we do a song?
I got nothing else. I'm going to be a guest on Shane Maddox's show tomorrow night, which is DizNerds Plus, where they review and talk about shows on the Disney Plus streaming network. We're going to be talking about some Marvel Hulk lady? Hulk, Mrs. Hulk, I think is what it's called.
Are they like married or is it they just dating or what is it?
I think dating.
Dr. Banner and some chick? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, yes.
All right. Hey, by the way, I saw Shane was
Dr. David, not Bruce Banner.
Didn't Shane just did a Vegas trip or
he
something?
He did. That's why we're doing episode 7 of She-Hulk instead of the finale. It's like, oh, crap. Well, now I got to rewatch 7 to refamiliarize myself with it. And then on your show, pretend I don't know what happens in episode 8. Damn it.
I really like Shane. And he did a bunch of great TikTok videos of him just holding his camera out in selfie mode in Vegas and then just rotating around in 360 degrees and not really making a face. Because you know that face he has, which is just kind of like, it's like resting snark face he kind of has.
Yeah.
It's just him just kind of going and spinning around with his phone. Yeah,
Fremont Street. I saw the Fremont Street ones.
I love that stuff. It's great. Shane, if you're listening, that stuff's awesome. Anyway, well, I look forward to hearing that. That'll be good.
Yeah.
Diz Nerds. Yeah. I like that name.
Diz Nerds Plus.
Diz Nerds Plus, everybody. All right, give us a song. You got a song?
Sure. MacGyver wrote in and said, my great aunt passed away at the age of 95 last week. We were close, and she was the last link we had to that generation of my grandparents and the matriarch of that side of our family. I love Stone Temple Pilots, and their song Fare Thee Well Feels Right. I know it's fairly recent, and there might not be a cover, so if there isn't, I leave it up to Brian's eminent knowledge and wisdom to pick a good substitute. P.S. Scott, I'm glad you and Kim enjoyed the Tim Tams I brought for you at BlizzCon 2014. If I get the opportunity to come back again sometime, I'll make sure to bring you more. Thank you both. Signed, MacGyver.
We did love those. Those were fantastic. Oh, I don't know if I'm allowed to eat them now.
What do you bite both ends of it off and use it as a straw for chocolate milk or something?
Kim did that. I think she knew right away to do that. And when I saw her doing that, I went, wait a minute, this is what kind of dark magic.
How did you know to do that?
Yeah, I had no idea. Yeah. But they were great. They are that's how memorable these were, because as soon as you said Tam Tams, BlizzCon.
Tam Tam Slam.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Anyway. That's great.
Cool. All right. So, I don't have a cover of Fare Thee Well, but listen, we all love Interstate Love Song. And we love the version that's by Reliant K from their Reliant K is for Karaoke EP Part 2, which came out, oh my God, 11 years ago. I can't believe that album is 11 years old.
Wow.
We need a Part 3, or we just need more from Reliant K.
This is the first time I heard about that. It was on either Coverville or here, and it still makes the rotation around here. We love those Part 1 and Part 2 covers.
They're so good. Good. All right, so here's Reliant K covering STP and Interstate Love Song.
Sounds great. We'll see you guys tomorrow for a Wednesday edition of TMS.
Go by. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Kids eat free.
Oh, kids eat free.